Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Go straight out to the HR&P guest line, being joined by World Series champion Josh Reddick. He'll be participating in the Going Yard Home Run Derby at Constellation Field in Sugar Land Saturday, October 5th. Cannot miss event. Roy Oswalt's going to be there. He's going to be throwing some BP. I guess he's a PO. He's a pitcher only. Andrew Jones, Rafael Palmeiro, Jose Canseco, Johnny Manziel, Antonio Brown, a few of the headliners, and, of course, our guy, Josh Reddick. Josh, I'm going to throw down a few bucks on this with Brian and Blankers here. Why should I throw down $100 on you to win this thing, Josh?
Well, I'm offended that you're only throwing $100 down, first of all. I show zero confidence in your guy. You know, I like that bet because I think the only problem I'm going to have is the man hosting it is Jose Canseco, because this guy, if you haven't seen, is still pretty big. He's a big human, and he hits the ball pretty far. So, I haven't really hit a lot in the last 2 or 3 years since I came back from Australia. I've embraced the hanging up the bat and the cleats, but the last week or two I've been getting back in the cage, hitting off my pitching machine to get back into somewhat hitting shape to just, you know, sit dead red and pull heaters. And, you know, I've got the Wizard Roy Oswalt under my belt. I got a career homer against that guy in the show, so I'm going to feel pretty comfortable against that guy throwing batting practice.
Are you telling me your experience with the Savannah Bananas, coupled with the fact that, I mean, you can ask for a random drug test, might help you get by the one challenger you've seen?
Get by a few for just looking at the characters of what we're dealing with here. I mean, it just depends. Everybody's out, you know, there are people who are out of the game. There's no telling what's going on in the world now. So I think the drug test is something that I think everybody's going to bypass on this one.
Josh Reddick joining us.
Fine. Let them use what they got. Let them use what they got to use, man. When I beat him, it makes me look that much better.
Yeah, why not? HRP guest line, Josh Reddick joining us. You can purchase your tickets to the Sugarland Space Cowboys website, so make sure that you do that. And it's not lack of confidence in you, Josh. It's more lack of funds in my bank account. I do work in radio, after all. Josh, we were kicking this around yesterday. You know, the Yordan Alvarez news is something it's frustrating, and it's kind of just part of the Astros season in 2024. If it's not one thing, it's another when it comes to the Houston Astros. People are thinking that I'm crazy. I want Yordan to hustle less. I know that sounds outrageous, but I don't need the big man trying to stretch out doubles. I don't need him stealing 6 bases this year. I want him to hit home runs. I want him to be in the lineup. Am I nuts for telling him to dog it a little bit?
I mean, there's pros and cons to statements like that, because he's such a big impact on that team and in that lineup that, you know, you kind of would hope to see him kind of ease up a little bit more, especially considering his past injuries with his legs. So, I mean, I think that's just something where he's going to have to come to terms with, because once you get in that box, man, you get that ball in that gap, there's no stopping you. That adrenaline kicks in, got to push the limit, got to get that double to get in scoring position. It's really hard to kind of kick back on that, but if you understand the fact that how important your legs are in this game, he's going to have to step back and look at it and go, man, if I don't hit 100% sure double that I could just trot in there on, then I'm just going to have to trot into first base and worry about it from then on. I think that's just something that's going to help his career in the long run. And, you know, obviously help out that team in the long run and the current run. So I think it's something that I think we all are thinking. But as baseball people and baseball fans, it might not be something that we want to say out loud. So I'll say out loud for everybody. Yes, we probably want Yordan to slow down a little bit.
There you go. Josh, I'm curious, too, because of the fact that we've basically treated it as bad as the start got off for this team got off to for the start of the season, how they've turned it around and how people fear this roster when it's healthy, that we've started to kind of get ahead of ourselves a little bit and start planning for the playoffs, talking about which pitchers are going to be available, what your rotation might look like. But is there any level of concern after dropping that game last night that, like, hey, the Mariners aren't dead yet, and you don't want this thing to get too dicey with these 5 games left to play?
No, I don't think there's any reason to panic. I mean, they put themselves in such a good spot right now. Because you got to look at the big picture. Seattle's backs are against the wall. Houston's going to get in the playoffs. Only thing they're really worried about now is getting that division, and I think that's something that, you know, is the last thing in that clubhouse's mind to be even panicked or worry about getting to that point. Granted, it's Seattle. It's magnified tenfold, a hundredfold because of where we're at in the season. But, yes, look back at March, April, May, when this team was absolute garbage. Let's call it what it is. They were garbage. And, you know, they were just weren't getting it done. And what they've done to turn that around is just spectacular. It speaks volumes for not only what that team can do, but what that organization can do. Because I think the only concern going into it was the starting pitching. You know, your back end of your bullpen was set with your three guys. And, you know, really the starting pitching became the issue because you lose guys like Garcia, you lose guys like Christian Javier, you lose guys like Justin Verlander, and you're like, well, crap, there's a third of our rotation right there. And then you get some later news, and then now you got these guys like Blanco, throws a no-hitter, is just absolutely shoving this whole year. You got guys like Eric Geddy and Hunter Brown who completely turned things around from the first month and a half of the season. So I think that was really the only issue because we knew this lineup could hit. The lineup was always never in question. And the crazy part is they had this big turnaround without their biggest piece in their lineup in Kyle Tucker. So that just goes to show you how deep and how great they do a job of not only getting guys ready for the big league, but just shoving them in there right away to succeed.
Josh Reddick joining us on the HRNP guest line. You can catch him on the Shin, does some pre and post game stuff. You can also catch him on Saturday, October 5th at Constellation Field in Sugar Land for the Going Yard Home Run Derby. You can get your tickets at the Sugar Land Space Cowboy website. You can go to timetogoyard.com, find out more information there. Josh, what do you think is the potential of this team once it does get to the postseason, if they do?
Oh, I mean, it's sky's the limit. I think they have all the abilities to make it all the way. They just gotta get hot. The playoffs are all about being hot and playing team fundamental baseball and doing everything right. When things start to go haywire and get out of hand, that's when, you know, the teams in the postseason take advantage because that's why they're there. You can't really give extra outs to teams like, you know, the Los Angeles Dodgers or teams like the Cleveland Indians. They're going to make you pay for it however they can, and especially in that postseason because every pitch matters. Everybody's on the edge of their seat, so they've got all the pieces to get it right. They just have to, one, obviously stay healthy and just make sure that they're managing everything the way they need to. Joe Spada does a great job of managing that lineup and getting those pieces in there when he needs to. But the biggest thing for him is how he does his bullpen. And we know when the playoffs come into play, especially that first round, you truly only need three starters. You shove another one of your guys in the bullpen, that way you worry about three or four or five innings. Five innings max in the playoffs in the first round is all you can expect out of your starters and just play matchups from then on. And they match up well. They've got, you know, three of the best back-end bullpen arms. And then when Taylor Scott's healthy, that's a completely different story because you got a sixth-inning guy as well who just doesn't give up runs.
Josh, you mentioned it. I was going to go to their next. Look, I think we all believe that, you know, the first three starters are pretty much set and you have a lot of trust in those guys. Bullpen has been taxed all year. Bullpen lately had some hiccups, including this weekend in that series against the Angels. And now you mentioned Taylor Scott, who's they're trying to get some rest for, who's on the mend. Neris hasn't looked good. And your big three in the back have had some issues. How concerning is that going into the playoffs?
I don't think it's any concern. I mean, I think you just answered the question right there because they are so taxed. I think they're just getting into those days in September where it's kind of hard. And when you look at it, you know, they're going to have to get that break. And I think that break in between the regular season and the playoffs is going to be a huge, big rest for them. But, you know, when the playoffs come into play, that's a different kind of ball game. You know, your adrenaline's a different rush. And especially when you're a relief pitcher, man, those numbers go completely out the window. Because those guys pitch on pure adrenaline, and you just worry about those guys when you need to. And I don't think they're having an issue, and, you know, there's pain pills. They'll figure it out. They'll get through the soreness, and they have pain. They'll find ways to mend that pain and go out there and perform if they're willing.
Josh Reddick joining us on the HRNP guest line. Josh, you appeared in tons of playoff games, 74 playoff games, 246 plate appearances in those playoff games. We in Houston have been very spoiled with the Astros getting to the playoffs. You obviously a big part of that, World Series champion in 2017. And you touched on it a little bit there. What is so different about postseason baseball versus the regular season?
I think it's just a different way for you to lock in as a player. Because everything matters, I think there's just that sense of urgency that, you know, you got to be focused 100%. There's no slacking off in any aspect, on, off the field. It's just about preparing yourself for that seven-game series and just going out there and giving everything you've got to
to get to the next level or get that win for that night when you're working on that task at hand. But I just think that, you know, the glamour, the media, and blows it up so much now with social media and everything. There's so much coverage now. I think it makes it harder to get that kind of locked in. But, you know, when it comes down to it, when that first pitch is thrown, there's nothing else in the world that matters than that baseball game at the moment. And I just think that, I mean, when you're in a postseason game, you're just in a different level of tunnel vision.
Josh, look, I mean, we know you were an above-average, outstanding defender your whole career. You were a well-rounded player. You look at the Astros right now, Jake is struggling at the plate, but he's a really good defender. Hayward's a guy that looks like he's obviously been a huge shot in the arm for this team, but he's got some pop. He can hit. He's still athletic with a good arm. How do you draw the line when putting the lineup together and look at the defense going, I'm going to sacrifice a little defense maybe, but I'm going to put a better bat in the lineup in Hayward versus Jake's my guy in center field to play defense. Whatever he does on offense is just a bonus.
I think that with all the analytics in the game today, I think you play matchups at that point. And, you know, if you're facing a tough righty, he's hard on righties, then you give Hayward those at bat until you get to that, you know, that late in the game where you used to see like the Jake Marisnik come in to center field and the outfield completely shift and you take one guy out. So I think that's just a matter of where it is. If you're, you know, seventh, eighth inning, ninth inning up and that guy's, you know, pretty far away from getting that last plate appearance and you're up by two or three, you're going to focus on that defense. So I think it just depends. You get a tough righty, give Hayward the at-bat, tight game, Myers comes in for whoever you need to replace in the outfield, and vice versa. You know, if you start Jake against a tough lefty, Hayward doesn't play against lefties anymore, so he's going to be down anyway. And then you wait for that, you know, righty-lefty matchup later in the game to pinch hit, and then you just make your straight-up swap. So analytics become that big thing, especially with those guys.
Josh Reddick joining us on the HRNP guest line. He'll be headlining the Going Yard Home Run Derby at Constellation Field on Saturday, October 5th, being joined by Andrew Jones, Rafael Palmeiro, Jose Canseco, Johnny Manziel, Ori Oswalt's going to be there, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, a guy that you know well, Josh, will be there as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun that night. There's the old woo.
There we go.
That you used to walk up to. I'm curious your perspective of Kyle Tucker. You know, you saw him come up whenever he was a rookie, a young player. He's matured into one of the best right fielders in baseball. What have you seen with his development over the years?
Just growth within himself, growth in the game, and growth as a human. I mean, when he first came up, he looked like, we used to call him the pin because he looked like a bowling pin, you know, kind of lower half was skinny, thicker middle, and then it kind of framed out at the top. But he's really filled in together, just becoming a guy who knows how to get things done, knows how to play the game right now. Because when he came up, he just seemed a little timid. And, you know, things were kind of tough with him because he came into such a great ball club. I mean, you come up in the Houston Astros in 2017-18, those were some pretty elite ball clubs to make your debut against because you just got guys everywhere just expecting greatness from the start. And I think it was a little much for him because, you know, we all know who Kyle Tucker was in the minors. He was, you know, one of the best baseball players in the history of the game in the minors. So he had all that attention. I think that coming up there and realizing that, you know, everybody around him is great at this level, that he just got to go that far. But he's really turned into this complete hitter who doesn't swing at bad pitches, goes everywhere, goes left, right, plays gold glove defense, as we saw. So he's really become into a well-rounded player who knows the game well.
Josh, let's get onto one of your favorite subjects. Your Dogs taking on Alabama this big game this Saturday. I don't know if you're going or not, but I know you're going to be dialed in. How your Dogs going to do against Bama? How you feeling about them to compete for another natty?
I tell you, man, it's always nerve-wracking when you're playing Alabama as a Georgia fan, no matter what year it is. But after watching that horrible game last weekend against Kentucky, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't nervous. on the road, I'm a little nervous. At home, I'd be feeling okay. But going into Tuscaloosa, I don't know. I'm a little nervous. I'm not saying I'm down on them, but I tell you what, they play like they did last week. They're going to get their you-know-what kick.
First time that Alabama is a home dog since George W. Bush was in office.
It's been a while.
Yeah, that's crazy. Josh, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us, hanging out. We enjoy watching you on the shin, and I know you're going to hit a bunch of dingers at the Going Yard Home Run Derby Saturday, October 5th.
Heck yeah, and thanks for having me, guys. Always a blast.
Josh Reddick, 2017 World Series champion. He, Andrew Jones, Rafael Palmeiro, Jose Canseco, Johnny Manziel, a certain letter there that you can drop in. Antonio Brown. And how many home runs is Antonio Brown going to hit into this thing? I don't know, but it's going to be fun to watch. JUCO Baseball, King of JUCO is going to be there. Not King of Twitch. King of JUCO is going to be there. And the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. They got the Nature Boy. They got the Nature Boy out there. Willin, Dylan, Kiss Stillin, Jet Riding, Son of a Gun is going to be out there on October 5th at Constellation Field.
Limousine riding.
Gator boot wearing. I mean, we'll have so much fun.
Have a hard time keeping these alligators down.
So much fun on October 5th. More information, timetogoyard.com. You can get your tickets now if you go to the Sugar Land Space Cowboy website. Just Google in Sugar Land Space Cowboy, and you'll go straight to that site. They even have a banner up on it right now, too. So thanks to Josh for coming on, and that'll be a lot of fun. Saturday, October 5th, the Going Yard Home Run Derby. Good conversation with the World Series champion. He got into Yordan Alvarez there. Yordan Alvarez is giving quotes in the Astros clubhouse right now. What is he saying about his knee? And was the news yesterday good news or bad news? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Alex on Twitch saying, no Booker T, boo. Booker T couldn't get it out of the infield. They knew who to ask. Brian shaking his head, no. He couldn't get it. He's a terrible person. He's a light hitter. He's a light hitter, the Booker T. I play golf.
There's no way Ric Flair is actually swinging the stick. Right?
No, he's just going to woo up and down the field.
Probably right.
He's not going to be able to keep his gator boots down.
I could see Ric Flair wanting to take a few swings.
No way.
He had a wrestling match like 10 months ago.
He's going to steal kisses from Johnny Manziel.
He damn near died three times in the ring.
Okay, right. Right, and now he did a wrestling thing, which they can make sure that they monitor. He can hurt himself severely trying to swing a baseball bat.
It's way harder to wrestle a match than to swing a baseball bat.
At this point in his
way harder.
Okay, great. If he was in his doing a real match, he wasn't doing like
it
a
was. He was doing
he
bumps.
A real match.
Okay, but bumps. Like it wasn't going to be like the kind of athleticism that they used with the guys competing.
True.
Now.
But he went through it. He took the bumps. He bled. He did his spots. It was
what he did in that match. Way more difficult than swinging a softball bat. Way more difficult.
He's way more experienced at doing what he did in that match.
Hold on. Are you literally debating this? That it's harder to swing a softball bat?
No, I'm saying at his age,
than to wrestle a match.
It's easier for him to get hurt swinging a bat trying to hit a home run than what he was doing in that
match. He was hospitalized for the match and had to stay in the hospital for several days, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
The last one?
Yes, the last one.
He almost died.
They did a big thing, Ric Flair's last match, and he legit, like, kind of went out three times and they thought he was dead.
It was like Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler.
Yeah, it was bad. It was real bad.
He's not going to be hospitalized for taking a couple of cuts.
Okay, you don't know that. If he's already gone through that, I would be concerned about him swinging a bat and hurting himself.
But I think he's stubborn enough to do it.
I've said a lot of mean things about Booker T. I don't think I've ever said anything as mean as what Blankers are saying right now, quite frankly.
I'm concerned about him hurting himself.
Are you concerned about Yordan Alvarez hurting himself?
Yes.
Yeah, he's currently hurt. Joe Espada said yesterday that the MRI shows that it is a knee strain. He's out for the Mariners series. He said he's hopeful that he could come back before the end of the regular season. He was asked, I think SportsMT might have asked him today, if today was the playoffs, would he play? Espada said he couldn't answer that. Yordan Alvarez in the clubhouse minutes ago, this courtesy of Brian McTaggart on Twitter. Yordan Alvarez said that he's able to walk much better today after not being able to put much weight on his knee yesterday, although he was in the dugout laughing and smiling. He is hopeful he can take some swings this weekend, but there's still some inflammation in his knee and he lacks mobility. Quote, time is going to decide.
Well, let's give him as much time as possible. Let's get the win you need, one of the wins against the Mariners you need tonight, and not have to worry about him and literally put him on ice. We know that he doesn't need any rehab stints in Sugar Land when he comes back. Let's just give him as much time as he needs to be ready for whatever is to come in the postseason.
Yordan Alvarez is a little bit extra. He can be a bit dramatic a little bit. Time is going to decide. Now, Yordan's great, so him saying this quote, I feel like he's going to hit 5 home runs in the wild card series.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. If you pencil him in the lineup, then I believe that he'll do some good things.
Quote, time is going to decide. So he's hopefully can take some swings, still some inflammation, lacks mobility. Stop sliding into second base, big man. We need you in the lineup. That's way more important than you taking extra bases. But do you think yesterday's news was good news? Again, Espada out for the series. They're hopeful that they get him back before the end of the regular season. Espada was asked if he thought this was good news. Espada said he does think the prognosis was good news. Do you think what we learned yesterday about Yordan's knee was good or bad?
I think it was good. I think because of the fact that immediately when you start thinking knees, you start thinking about MCLs and PCLs and ACLs and all the different things that can happen to a knee that can really, really, really put you on the shelf. Aside from a bruise, and I know that those can be very detrimental in the long term when we found out what the Astros were doing with bone bruises this year. But aside from just being like a bruise or, you know, a wound that, you know, he could come back in a day or two, I think this was very good news because I was thinking the worst and fearing that as good of a season as this has been, the way they've salvaged it, turned it around, and been encouraging us every single day, this would have been the one that I don't think that they could have gotten over.
I'm with you on that. I feel like without Yordan, their odds of winning the World Series without Yordan goes critically down. I wouldn't say it's zero, but they go down tremendously. I think it's good news, too. I thought I was more on the bruise than the sprain. Turned out to be a sprain, so maybe there is some credibility to the wet infield for grabbing as opposed to softening a blow, because they said it was a knee strain, not a knee contusion.
And I watched the replay several times, and I'm going, unless it was the initial impact.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, otherwise, a strain or a sprain or anything like that, you would think you hyperextend or the knee would really get jolted like it does in football and other things. It was just the immediate impact when he went down, and that's why I always, you know, go that route with the wet clay infield.
If it was a bruise, I think it would have helped it. But because it's a strain or a sprain, they call it a sprain.
I'm not sure which one they used.
Either one of the same, right?
A sprain might be a little bit more severe than a strain, I think. But don't quote me on that.
But it's still like ligament damage.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like a bruise. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think that's like the wet infield, I think, is more like a decent argument because it's a strain or sprain as opposed to a contusion. Because I think if it was a contusion, he said sprain knee. If it was a contusion, I think it would have softened the blow. But sprain is like there's some little bit of jolting going on, which you can make the case, hey, that wet infield kind of grabbed at it and made it anchor as opposed to a gliding slide. Although Yordan probably had something to do with it too, because he does he kind of hammers his knee into the ground.
He does go down, and it's a whole lot of weight going down when he's going at that rate of a speed too. It's like bull in a china shop. Now you're not trying to stop it, you're trying to slide it. There's got to be a lot of impact on that joint.
And I knew Josh Reddick knew ball because he was like, yeah, he's let me say the quiet part out loud. Yeah, it's probably better if Yordan takes it easy a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this across sports when your best player, and you mentioned Barry Bonds, but you grow across different sports, your best player gets a pass in a lot of situations where there's a chance that anything extra could cause any kind of an injury because he's so impactful and so necessary to the success of your ball club. We've seen it with Akeem and different Rockets over the years. We've seen it, you know, even in football where you're not going to get mad at some of your, you know, the best receivers in football, like even a Tyreek Hill that like to get down, make business decisions at the time. Those business decisions are extremely beneficial to your team too, not just his career, in making sure he stays on the field. We saw when you didn't do that with Tank Dell what happened last year in a small sample.
Guess the date. When do we see Yordan Alvarez again?
Playoffs.
October 1st? What playoff?
When they get to the playoffs, that's when they're going to see him, unless it's absolutely necessary. Unless this thing goes completely sideways and they've got to get wins in the Cleveland series, that you could see him maybe in the last two games of the Cleveland series. To me, as long as they get this, they solidify the division, you don't see him till playoffs.
I think we see him once in Cleveland. I think we see him once.
Even if they wrap it up?
Yeah. I think he'll DH, and I think he'll get two plate appearances, and they'll pull him, like a spring training game, just to see some live pitches and to track. Because, I mean, the playoffs start, if you make it, they start next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We're a week out of the wild card series beginning, which you can listen to the Major League Baseball playoffs and when the Astros play in them right here on ESPN 97.5, a week away.
Yeah, look, I would say that we've seen enough of him to know he doesn't need rehab stints. When he comes back, he seems like he is, you know, as on it as he was before he left. So I'm not going to worry about all of that. But if push comes to shove, as long as things, the cards fall the right way and you don't need him, I don't need to see him until the playoffs.
Yeah. Virginia saying, remember when a teammate choked Harper for not hustling to first? That was Papelbon. And Papelbon's an idiot. Like, how? I mean, but Harper was young. If Harper was doing that now, though, there's no one that would mess with him. If you were on Alvarez, was coasting to first base, no one's messing with
him. But the weird thing is that Harper's the kind of guy now that would bark at guys for something like that. He's done it, I think, even this year with some of the thing with hustle plays where he has a tendency to get on his teammates now. But yeah, he was that guy early in his career. Now it seems like he's that kind of that salty veteran.
Yeah, I mean, Harper still is going to coast. Like, Harper on a routine ground ball to short isn't going to bust it to first base. Jose Altuve doesn't bust it to first base on routine double plays to short.
Yeah, Bregman doesn't bust it a lot either, because that's one of the ones even my daughter points at all the time and goes, why isn't he running harder?
I don't really care, though, by the way. I don't want them to be like that. Like, on a routine ground ball to short in a game on July 23rd, I don't want them to. I really don't. I mean,
we've kind of understood, too, especially with guys, even if they don't have a tendency to have leg injuries, but Altuve's had his, Bregman's had his. But you get it. The importance is the big picture and having these guys around as much as possible, because where they do the most damage is when they're in the batting lineup. And we know what Bregman means defensively, too. If it means you get those two things and you sacrifice him trying to, you know, get a knock out a hit, fine.
If you're one of my best three, maybe four hitters, I want you to check out and not hustle during the regular season.
I appreciate
season.
Pena and the fact that what I think.
Yeah, but he's not one of your top three hitters.
No, he's not.
He has to hustle to get hits.
But I was going to say, he's what, top three in the league in terms of infield base hits, because he's got the speed. I appreciate what Pena does, but I certainly don't expect Yiner and Yordan and Altuve and Tucker or Bregman to do that.
If Pena hit like Yordan, he wouldn't have that many infield hits.
Probably right.
He wouldn't, because he knows he needs as many hits as he can get, because he's not that great of a hitter. So let me hustle and run down to first base. You know, here was Reddick, too, by the way, talking about saying the quiet part out loud about Yordan Alvarez coasting a bit.
Because he's such a big impact on that team and in that lineup that, you know, you kind of would hope to see him kind of ease up a little bit more, especially considering his past injuries with his legs. I mean, I think that's just something where he's going to have to come to terms with, because once you get in that box, man, you get that ball in that gap, there's no stopping you. That adrenaline kicks in, got to push the limit, got to get that double to get in scoring position. It's really hard to kind of kick back on that, but if you understand the fact that how important your legs are in this game, he's going to have to step back and look at it and go, man, if I don't hit 100% sure double that I could just trot in there on, then I'm just going to have to trot into first base and worry about it from then on. I think that's just something that's going to help his career in the long run. And, you know, obviously help out that team in the long run and the current run. So I think it's something that I think we all are thinking. But as baseball people and baseball fans, it might not be something that we want to say out loud. So I'll say out loud for everybody. Yes, we probably want Yordan to slow down a little bit.
Woo! Josh Reddick, knower of ball. The guy played in 1,300 games. Like, Branham, you know what you're talking about. You know what you're talking about.
Acknowledge me!
All right, 713-780-3776. Cash him or trash them. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I know ball, and I know Oktoberfest. Oktoberfest is back. Make plans for Saturday, October 5th, Sunday, October 6th for Oktoberfest on the Kima Boardwalk. It is so much fun. Go ahead and put it in your calendar now. German beer, German food, live music, cornhole tournaments both days, Steinholding competitions both days, costume contest, and much, much more. Go to KimaBoardwalk.com, figure out the schedule, figure out the day that you're going. Go both days. It's free for you to attend. Walk around. Doesn't cost you a thing. So head out there October 5th, October 6th, Saturday and Sunday. Beer tickets, beer steins, and food tickets can be purchased at the event or online today at KimaBoardwalk.com. So go ahead and lock in those plans now. Some great beer. Shiner Oktoberfest, Shiner Bock, Blue Moon, Belgian White, Yingling Oktoberfest, Bunch more, but those are just some of the highlighters. Souvenir steins are available for purchase right now, KimaBoardwalk.com. And how about this lineup of food? Schnitzel on a stick. Oh, so good. German beer bratwurst. Sausage on a stick. German potato salad. Sauerkraut. Soft pretzel with the beer cheese, always so good. So get out there for great beer and for great food. Saturday, October 5th, live music from 1 till 10. Stein holding competition, cornhole tournament at night. Then on Sunday, October 6th, we'll have all that fun over again. Live music, noon till 9. Stein holding competition at 5 and cornhole at 5:30. Go to KemaBoardwalk.com right now. See the full schedule of events, the concert lineup. Purchase your tickets now. Beer tickets, beer steins, food tickets, all right now at KemaBoardwalk.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good. But that's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bee.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-3776. Blankers, what you got?
First one I got is that the Cincinnati Bengals, as bad as their defense looked last night, are still going to make the playoffs in the AFC.
Trash.
Trash.
Trash. 0-3 is a huge hole to climb out of. I think they've done it before. A different Bengals team. You mentioned the defense looking bad. They were going up against a college offense yesterday and looked that bad defensively. Their running game's not very good. I don't see them getting to the 10 wins I think is going to be needed to make the AFC. Maybe if they were in the NFC, AFC, not happening. Trash.
But look at their division. I mean, when you look at the division, the fact that the Browns aren't great, the Ravens aren't great, the Steelers,
Ravens
I don't believe in.
Are better than the Bengals.
They are, but I don't know that they're going to be great or even if they were. They are now. Let's see what they are at the end of the year. I just don't believe in their quarterback.
Three games up. Even if you're a better team in the last 14 games, you got to make up three games worth of ground. If that's a spoiler, it is in fact.
Trash.
Because, yeah, I'm trashing it. I'm a huge believer in Joe Burrow. You guys know I spent the entire offseason talking him up as the second best quarterback in the league. But they're 0-3. I'm out. I think they can rebound to have a respectable season. Get to 8 wins, get to 9 wins. But like Jeremy said, I don't think that's good enough in the NFC or the AFC. If it was the NFC, I could see them sneaking in. But I'm out on them for the AFC.
I think it's plausible. I think it's in play. But no, it's not going to happen. Blonde haired, like, what was that song? Cindy Lauper. What did she say? Blondes have fun or whatever?
Girls just want to have fun.
Oh, whatever. Blondes aren't as good at quarterbacks in the NFL. It's better to have dark hair to be a good quarterback in the NFL than it is to have blonde hair.
I think of the last blonde.
Terry Bradshaw.
Boomer Esiason.
Overrated.
Bill Sims.
Terry was overrated. Look at all the greats. Look at all the great quarterbacks. They have dark hair. Tom Brady, dark hair. Peyton Manning has dark hair. Who are the best quarterbacks right now? Pat Mahomes has dark hair. Lamar Jackson has dark hair. Josh Allen has dark hair. CJ Stroud has dark hair. It was a poor decision by Joe Burrow to turn blonde. That's the reason the 2024 Bengals aren't going to make the playoffs.
Trash.
It's a blonde. I don't like the way the Monday. I like two Monday Night Football games. I don't like the way that Monday Night Football. I don't know how you trash that, by the way. But blonde quarterbacks have been good.
Trash.
Trash.
You're trashing fact and evidence. Anyways, I like two Monday Night Football games. I don't like how they overlap each other as much, which got me back into my old tangent. I don't like how Sunday games overlap each other. You have all these great games that are going on at the exact same time. You should make these as standalone as you possibly can. Just like the NCAA tournament. The NCAA tournament became a lot more fun when they started to stagger the games throughout the day. So you had basketball game, all day long, instead of having every game starting at the exact same time. So again, the NFL should go to a staggered schedule model. How many games can there be in 1 week in the NFL? 16. Until you get to the bye weeks, there are fewer. But the most you can have is 16. You're going to have a Thursday night game. You have a Monday night game. You're going to have a Sunday night football game. The rest of the games, stagger the starts by 30 minutes, please. That way we can watch these exciting finishes in their own way. Instead of having to kick it around Red Zone Channel or flip the channel back and forth. Sometimes regional restrictions. Sometimes we don't have Red Zone Channel. Make all of these games on national TV. Start them at noon, 12:30, 1, 1:32, 2:33, 3:34, 4:35, 5:36. Every NFL game should have its own start time. That way the finish can be a standalone finish instead of all of them starting at once. Stagger the NFL kickoffs on Sunday.
For forgot how passionate you were on this.
This is such a good idea.
I heard this one before.
Such a good idea. I do it once a year.
I'm for getting to see as much football as possible. I think that just with the viability of all the teams and the schedules, I could see it being three in each in a certain time frame, in certain windows, just because they want that the primetime games to be so standalone with no overlap. But I'm for it. I would cash it because I want to see as much football as possible.
I think you trashed it the first time I said it.
I'm more likely to do it now because of the fact that with my time I'd running around and stuff like that, I'd like to, when I get back to the house, have games that still I can see finishes on.
Yeah, trash. I'm going to trash this. I trash it because I wouldn't go as far as you would. I like the idea of at least a little bit of a stagger because I liked what they did on Monday night. But I don't need every game having its own 30-minute window because, to me, that's one that diminishes red zone. Because if you have a game, if you have games by itself in the clutch, then red zone isn't as interesting if there's only one game going on. I also think it would create chaos for fantasy football, setting lineups and checking if guys are in or out. So that I would hate. But if you did something to where you had, like, you go from two windows, noon and three, to four windows, let's say noon, stagger at one, and then three, stagger at four, I'd be in on that. But to have complete, like, every 30 minutes, a new game is starting, I'd be out on that.
You didn't like the way college basketball did this in the tournament.
Yeah, but it's they have way more games. I think it's more necessary for them than it is.
I still get to
the round of 32, you have 16 games.
The only way I like the Monday night doubleheader is when it's like East Coast, West Coast.
Agreed.
Yeah, I don't like even a half hour to an hour is not enough window for me. I'd like to watch as much of both games as I could on Monday night.
5855 not going to work because of TV contracts. You would have to negotiate in the new deal, but you could. I mean, ESPN has ESPN, ABC, ESPN2. You stagger it there. CBS has multitude of channels, and they work with Turner. NBC has a bunch of channels as well, so it's doable. It would just have to be negotiated. Current contract, you're right. Phil Sims and Boomer Esiason says 0522. Those guys are bums. Bum. 5798. Go ahead.
No, I said both of them. Yeah, I was trying to think of the other one.
5798. I'm cashing the blonde take. Mystery solved on why Trevor Lawrence has been trash. Great point. Doesn't Will Levis have blonde hair, too?
Blondish. Yeah, he's blonde.
Yeah, it's more blondish than dark. I know. That was a failure on my part. Maybe that's what threw me over the top. That made my Will Levis made my hypothesis a theory into a thesis. I think that's how it works. What's your cash?
Isn't Brady sandy blonde? No, he's not more sandy dark. Blonde. He's sandy brown.
He's more dark.
He's kind of a tweener.
Yeah, that's pretty dark. That's pretty dark.
I'm just saying it because he's the greatest of all time. So I'm trying to get a little something to go that way.
Yeah, Jasper said that I'm racist. Estimate? No, I'm not. I'm Harris'd is what I am. Dark hair.
And I'm Mexican.
Are better athletes. All right, what do you got?
Well, it's funny that we bring up long quarterbacks and Trevor Lawrence because my cashier trashed it. And I came up and I thought of this while I was watching Trevor Lawrence just put on an absolute bleep show in Buffalo last night. Maybe this is way too optimistic, or maybe this is trying to hang on from what I thought of Trevor Lawrence as a collegiate prospect. But I think Trevor Lawrence is going to eventually, once he complicates things because he's got like a 4-year contract that the Jaguars can't really get out of. But whenever he gets out of Doug Peterson, wherever he gets out of Jacksonville, he's going to follow the path of a Geno Smith, of a Baker Mayfield. He gets with an actual offensive guru. Let's say he goes to Green Bay. Jordan Love's gone, hypothetically. I know that's not going to happen. But with an offensive genius that can mold quarterbacks, goes to a Kyle Shanahan, one of these places, Trevor Lawrence gets back to at least 90% of what we thought of him as a prospect and becomes a really good quarterback in about 3 or 4 years.
I'm going to trash it simply because I just think that with the money he's making and the fact that by the time he's done in Jacksonville, he's going to have another coach or two. They're going to keep throwing things at him, and I just don't believe. And I didn't believe in him all that much prior. And Jeremy and I have had these conversations in the past. I just didn't see enough to think that he was worthy of all the hype and the number one pick and everything that came bestowed to him when he came into the league. But I don't believe in Trevor Lawrence. That was ugly last night. I think he's relegated in his next job to being a backup by that point.
You don't think Doug Peterson's a great offensive coach?
I don't.
Huh. Okay. I think I'm going to trash it. I think that Trevor Lawrence is going more the Carson Wentz route, where he had some moments of really good play for a period of time early in his career. Carson Wentz, I believe, got paid as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I think
he got
a big
paid
deal in Philly. And then he kind of just faded away in his career, kind of a career backup, had some moments to start, really was very average at best. I think Lawrence is following the Carson Wentz path of riches, but very, very little production. Yeah, I'm out on Trevor Lawrence. It's sad.
That was sad last night, man. I mean,
he threw an interception to a myth. That's how bad Trevor Lawrence is.
Yes, he gave DeMar Hamlin his first ever interception.
It depends on how you position that, because other people on the internet positioned it even worse than that.
A ghost?
No,
apparently
a dead
person. Ghost, because, I mean, Tua ran right into him, knocked himself out for eight weeks,
right.
and now Trevor Lawrence is throwing the ball to him.
DeMar Hamlin's Dr. Death. He escaped death, and now he's killing quarterbacks.
Oh, man.
There's two down, and how many's left?
C.J. Stroud plays the Bills in 2 weeks.
C.J. Stroud in 2 weeks.
Can we rest C.J. Stroud against Dr. Death DeMar Hamlin? Eric the Driver, Young doesn't start for the Panthers again this season. Also called it last week that Dalton would look much better in this offense. You're right about that. Andy Dalton looked like the Red Rockets.
Boy. What did he throw? 300-plus and a couple of touches and no picks.
He's the only quarterback this season to do it, yeah.
So does Young start again this season? Cash or trash? He said he doesn't start.
I think he does. I think he does, too. Whether it be by injury or at a certain point, they're out of it and they got to see what they have in Bryce Young again, that he'll start again.
If I see the injury aspect, that makes it an easy cash. But if you threw in the caveat of it would not be injury related, will he still start?
Yes, because of the fact that they're going to be out of it and Andy Dalton's not going to come back next year to be your starter, that they're going to see what they have in Bryce Young again.
I mean, I know it's 3 weeks in, so everyone's only a couple games out, but they are only one game out, and it is the NFC South. I mean, if Andy Dalton plays well and they're in the playoff race, I can't see them making the move. But if, like you said, they are out of it, then, yeah, they go back to Bryce.
I kind of get the sense Canales doesn't like them. Like, we look at the offense under Dalton, look at it under Young, night and day.
There's definitely evidence that says right off the top that if he's making that change that quickly, that he probably doesn't think there's enough to work with for right now.
What does Andy Dalton say about the dark light hair theory? Is he an outlier?
Where does ginger fall into the dark light hair scale?
I think it's an abnormality.
I think it's its own thing.
I think so,
yeah,
too.
It's not applicable.
Yeah, 8576, cash or trash, Fromber, 7-plus strikeouts tonight. Feels
I'll
like a prop
that.
Bet to me. Yeah, Mariners strike out a lot. I'll cash that as well. Corey, cash or trash, the NFC East will have 3 head coach openings this offseason.
Mike McCarthy,
and I don't think they can get rid of. I don't think they get rid of Dable.
I don't think so either.
I think they give him a chance with another quarterback.
I could see Sirianni being gone.
Although Malik Nabers might save Daniel Jones.
Sirianni, McCarthy. I think two.
Well,
he said
I think
three.
Two. Yeah, I don't think they get to three.
I would trash.
See, I think Dable and Sirianni are on the fence, not guarantees. So I would say 2 is the number. I would, or maybe even 2.5, but I can go up to 3.
See, now the only thing that gives that a chance is the fact that Tepper's such a wild card, and he's been known for like quick hooks with coaches he just hired, that he might pull
Tepper.
Not Tepper. I'm sorry. I could see the Giants saying, look, we gave him enough of a chance.
Oh, okay.
And in
Joe
New York.
Mara.
The Mara family.
Me too, but I think he's 50-50. And I think Sirianni's less than 50-50.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So then how
he's
can you get to 3?
Right,
I think 3 is possible, but I can't cash that because I think Dable's 50-50. I think Sirianni's less than 50-50. So that doesn't get me up to 3.
Yeah, I think you're right. The number's probably better at 2, but I think there is a chance for 3.
3209, cash this. Jordan is done for the year. The doctors are liars.
I think he's done for the regular season. I just said it. I don't think he's done for the playoffs.
And who? I'm going to trash this simply on a technicality. We never heard anything from the doctors. We heard from Spada, and they lie all the time.
About the MRIs and things, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm trashing this because I never heard from a doctor.
And did we ever see a press release? I never saw a press release from the Astros.
No, they never tell us what the doctor says. Nope. Brandon T, cash or trash. Astros clinch the division tonight.
I'm going to cash it.
I'm going to brand them foot in mouth this for the sake of the city of Houston and trash it. Because I am known to put my foot in my mouth and then things I say turn out to be false. They do not come to fruition. They turn out to be terribly wrong. So for the sake of Houston, I'm going to brand them foot in mouth this into existence. I'm trashing the Astros clinching the division tonight. That way we can bad take Boulevard me on Thursday and be like, ha-ha, you're an idiot. But I'm doing it for you, Houston.
Brian?
Well, I will cash it, but I think by Jeremy so obviously telling us he doesn't believe what he just said that he cancels out the idea of the foot and mouth jinx.
Cash or trash blanker. That's mean. Cash or trash blankers can't go a whole segment without saying the word fact.
Facts.
I don't know if you said
fact. I don't remember you saying facts.
I don't
that
either.
Often.
I say obviously.
Jeremy says facts. I don't remember you saying it very often.
Why are y'all saying facts?
Oh, don't tell me this is good. Yeah.
2.1.
Y'all need to research what the Red Rocket means before you call Andy Dalton that again. I don't care. I know what a Red Rocket means. It's Andy Dalton. Pride and joy of Katy, Texas, baby. That's what it means.
His name is the Red Rifle, though.
Oh, that's right. I was going to say, it is his nickname, but it is Red Rifle.
It's Red Rifle.
Red Rocket to me. Jasper, I've heard gingers don't have souls, so maybe Dalton wouldn't get the ghost treatment from Hamlin. Oh.
Ooh. He's interesting. He's bulletproof.
Okay, Jasper.
Twisting it.
I see ya.
Halloween's around the corner. Good
I
one.
See ya. I'm sticking to this dark hair thing, though. I think it's a good one. I think it's a good one. Film Don't Lie. Film Don't Lie. The Branham Batty. What I saw on film watching this one back. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
U of H, Cougars taking on 18th ranked undefeated Iowa State on Saturday, September 28th, 6 o'clock. It's going to be beautiful, beautiful Saturday evening. So get on outside, watch Houston, watch Iowa State, family weekend, Hispanic Heritage Game, a night of thrilling plays, hard-hitting action, unforgettable moments. And they have a family night special going on right now. Four tickets, four hot dogs, four drinks, just $80. Where else can you get that sort of family deal to watch some underrated Big 12 football? Number 18 team in the country, Houston Cougars playing their first home Big 12 game of the year, looking for the upset. All that for just $80 and you're sitting outside in beautiful weather? I mean, it's a deal that's too good to be true. Go to uhcougars.com/tickets, 713-GO-COUGS to get your tickets now. Come early, be loud, wear red. Going to give away a pair of tickets right now to caller number 4 to 713-780-3776. So caller number 4 going to Houston, Iowa State, Saturday at 6 o'clock to 713-780-3776. All right, time for the Branham Batty. Branham Batty, this is the alter ego. Turn on my football. What do they call it? Leatherheads? What else? What other things they call football knowers?
Gridiron? Something.
They don't call it. Seamheads is baseball. Leatherheads is kind of the old helmets. I don't know any of them. Now, what are the cliches you give to football knowers? 713-780-3776. I just call myself the Branham Batty whenever I turn the film cap on, whenever I turn the football side of things on. Here are some things I noticed, Blankers, watching the – because film don't lie. Film don't lie. The offensive line was worse on film.
Oh, no.
It was so much worse on film, Blankers, than it was in the game. Like the theory of – you have six or seven guys to block five, and you're not getting it done because they're throwing stunts at you, because they're throwing games at you, because they're disguising their rush, because they're delaying the rush. The Texans were clueless, clueless defending games, and they have been. This isn't new. They just kind of ignored it in victory in weeks 1 and 2. We saw it in the second half against Chicago. We were talking about it with DJ. The offensive line was worse on film. They have no idea what to do when they're blocking games and stunts, even if they have more bodies. I saw 7-on-5, couldn't handle it, free rusher. 6-on-5, at least 3 times, couldn't handle it, free rusher. They can't pass off assignment. Communication is poor. I don't know what the coaching looks like throughout the week, but that could potentially be poor. They have multiple guys that are being double-teamed and allowing free rushers with games. They cannot handle it right now, and they're getting killed with it.
That's inexcusable for an NFL team. That is inexcusable for an NFL team, and that needs to be fixed immediately. And you're right. It's cohesion. It's communication. And we talk about it all the time with spots on the offensive line. It's not just about handling your area of the field and doing your job. It's how do you work in unison with the rest of your unit? That's extremely disappointing.
And because of the line being bad, I think you're seeing some collateral damage off of that, like some domino effects to that. Like, we want a lot of 11 personnel because we think it suits this team, right? You have Nico, you have Steph, you have Tank. Okay, play 3 receiver sets, 11 personnel. You can't do that when you distrust the offensive line to protect because you want to go 12 personnel, play 2 tight ends to do what? To help the offensive line. So, like, you do have the personnel to play 11, but you can't do it because you can't block. So Bobby Slowick has to play 12 personnel to try to keep his quarterback upright.
Yeah, that's a scary proposition, and that's something that, you know, whether it has to be addressed and maybe, you know, I don't know if that means, you know, enhancing the fact that do you need another blocking tight end? I mean, do you have to?
I want to see Irv Smith.
I think that if you already have one on your roster that has NFL experience, it can't be any worse than what you got. And because you lost Jordan, I really believe that you got to try somebody else there because Dalton Schultz ain't going to put his nose on somebody and be able to sustain a block.
And Cade Stover's worse.
Yeah, and he's just
worse
raw.
Than Schultz.
Yeah, he's raw.
As a blocker, he is worse than Schultz at tight end, too. Like, Schultz had bad film blocking. Stover's was way worse.
Just go look at the Grenard plays alone, and he made them look silly.
How about the holding play on play one?
Yeah.
Holding play on play one. Yeah, that was Grenard, too. He was beat all day long. Grenard was running all over him. I thought, other than poor offensive line play, that the offense was actually okay. Like, it was actually all right. Like, they were moving the ball. There was multiple times. Like, they were at the 25, 30-yard line, penalty, sack, and now you're looking at a long field goal. That happened on the first drive, or the second drive, with Kaimi. Like, you were down inside the 25. Mm-hmm. You take a sack. Kaimi, all of a sudden, looking at a 50-something-yard field goal and misses. You had multiple drives into their half of the field that got you nothing, because once you got there, you either gave up a critical sack or you committed some penalties, like four in a row.
See, that's where I think on D'Amico's comments afterwards and yesterday, I think there is some truth to the fact that they looked like they had plays that would move the football.
They did.
They had positive plays that way, but because everything was being drawn back and sucked back and sucking the life out of you because of the offensive line between the penalties and the missed blocks, you really couldn't get any momentum.
I thought Stroud actually played really good. I thought Stroud played really well considering the offensive line breakdowns. There was a couple of moments when he was trying to do too much. The second interception was one of those, like third and seven, you're down multiple possessions. Like, he tried to force a ball that led to an interception. Not a good play, but hey, in that situation, you can kind of understand the mindset. The first play of their second possession after he threw the first interception, that was tipped, not his fault. He had two checkdowns that were easy plays for like 5 to 7 yards that he normally makes 100 times out of 100. I think he was trying to get it all back in one play, looking for a deep ball, had to like scramble out, got like a couple of yards. I did notice he got a little bit gun shy. Like, he's great with his anticipation throws. He makes a lot of throws before his receiver is even like breaking, before he starts his cut, like when his receiver still has like outside leverage on a defender before he makes it, you know, inside and gets inside leverage. I noticed he was a little gun shy on that, and I think it was because of the offensive line. So that stood out to me.
Because that's the one that you mentioned that we talked about yesterday that I said it looked like he got happy feet, per se, because of the fact that it was just all day and it was coming from every direction. And to your point, that one that I keep referencing is that running back out of the backfield with a linebacker on him. And before the running back could even look up, look over his shoulder to see where the ball was, he had a guy in his face and still put that ball the only place it could be.
Yeah, he made some great throws. Like, considering the pressure he was under, he made some great throws into the face of pressure. And I do feel like he got happy-footed whenever he was a beat late with the anticipation throws. Mm-hmm. So it was like the very next step. Like, I'm a little late here, now I can't go to it. Where normally he's making that throw, but because of the offensive line and the pressure he was facing, he was a little gun-shy, and then it's like, okay, that's not there, let me take off. A few times he took some hits escaping, which I don't like him doing. There was a couple of times where he's like lunging forward, not even really for like the line to gain, not even really for first downs, where it's like, hey, Stroud, I need you for 17 games, man. I understand you're losing this game and you're trying to do all your might, but can we not take some of these hits that you're taking?
This is our Yordan discussion all over
And
again.
I'm not talking about the sacks.
I know the one you're talking about. He goes head first and he's lunging forward, but it's not to get to the line, and two defenders are converging on him, and it's like, slide right there. Just please, just, you know, make a business decision, but take the safest route possible, because of the fact that he was under such duress all game. But because without him, it's like Yordan with the Astros.
Yep.
Without him, you are nothing.
Yeah, he was taking some hits I don't like him taking. And I admire the competitiveness, but I need you for 17 games more than I need your competitiveness when you're trailing in week three. I threw some shade a little bit at Diggs yesterday for the Texans, like getting him numbers because he was playing at Minnesota. Diggs was great. Diggs was really good in this game. He was fighting for extra yards. I wouldn't say he was breaking tackles, but he was fighting some tackles to gain him an extra yard or two that on at least two occasions got him the first down. So I thought that I threw a little shade his way, like, oh, Texans are giving him the football at Minnesota. He was really good. So my bet on that.
Different than CJ, same kind of situation, though. Two guys converging on him on the right sideline, and he was trying to make sure he got the first down. And a lot of receivers make business decisions on a regular basis, head out of bounds or just hit the turf. And he split both defenders, put his head down, and got the yardage.
Yeah, and I admire that from a receiver. Like, I don't need my quarterback doing that, but I like it when my receiver does that. And then in terms of, like, what does this offense need to do because their offensive line is playing so poorly, I thought the quick pass game worked a lot. Like, it really worked well in this game. And if the Texans can't trust their offensive line, I think they need a lot more of the quick passing game.
Yeah, I question why they didn't try it more. Even to start the second half when nothing else is working, the fact that you have, we talk about how many weapons they have and so many, even Cam out of the backfield can catch the ball and do some things with it. We saw it in the preseason. I questioned why they didn't just, I think that they thought that that was more of a getting to the point of an insurmountable lead way earlier than they had to. They were trying to get everything in chunks, whereas I think you could have created chunks by doing some of those short passes.
Yeah, they were looking for like a six-run homer. And I think that, and especially going forward because of where your offensive line is at, I think the quick passing game has to be used way more often. And honestly, there were times where they did it and it worked. Illegal formation, back it up. And now you're looking at a first and 15 or a second and 12 or a third and 9, and it's like, okay, maybe not the greatest play to call with this down and distance.
Plus, with Tank and Diggs both being so effective in the slot or in that intermediate pass range, you connect on a few of those, the defense starts to kind of collapse a little bit more. Now you can possibly look for that bigger play over the top with Nico.
Yeah, yeah. So give me a little bit more of that. Dre says Schultz is the opposite of Diggs. I think you might be right, Trey. I hate to say it, but I think you might be right.
I keep dwelling on, there was two of them, but the one that was so glaring was that one that CJ threw a beautiful ball to, but there was one on the sideline too, where he just had to give a little bit more effort, and it looked like he was just kind of like, oh, ho-hum.
And the effort on the blocking side, not great. And then I mentioned earlier in the show, the effort whenever he was, you know, he dropped the ball, it was ruled a fumble on the field, later overturned. His chase down was, it left a lot to be desired. All right, Texans lost this one by 27 points. It was a devastating loss. Did they lose Super Bowl contender status? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I got to tell you about the greatness that is Pro Dunk Hoops. Look, it's the season. It is the season. Pretty soon, we're going to be seeing a lot of basketball going on. Pretty soon, we're going to have good weather. You're going to be outside more. And if you want to be outside, you want to get some basketball in, you should get a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware, height adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. It's great. And with their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. Lightning adjust feature, 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Easy to do, fun to do, and for people like me, it's idiot-proof. Their accessories are next level. LED light kits for night play. You work during the day, kids are at school, only chance for you to play is at night. It's still a little bit hot, so you want to play at night. When it cools down, get an LED light kit. Backstop nets, you can not chase down the basketball. That's always annoying. Pull pad lettering and lots more. You can order everything online, too, including professional installation. That's right. The pros at Pro Dunk will professionally install your goal at the perfect height. You don't have to worry about a box being delivered to your driveway and you have to assemble this 2,000-piece puzzle. The pros from Pro Dunk will do it for you, and they'll do it perfectly. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a bone. Let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.